The recording is now started.
Thank you. Everyone, it's the 41st meeting of the CWG, and it's 1703 UTC. Turn it over to Jonathan and me to chair.
Hey, Grace. Thank you very much. It's Jonathan. Lisa is in The Hague, I know, attending a meeting, and so she will assist, but I'll lead the meeting, and so we'll work together, but in fact, we've divvied up the agenda anyway. I committed to make a couple of opening remarks, but before we do that, let's just make sure we record as present everyone in the Adobe Connect room and call for anyone who is not in the Adobe Connect room and only on telephone audio to make themselves known.
Yeah, hello, this is Sean. I'm on audio for now.
Thanks, Sean. Okay, so we are coming together shortly after our Monday and Tuesday meetings, and I know the design teams have met in the interim, including an integrated meeting of three design teams, which I was the guest chair on yesterday. Clearly, those were a pretty busy couple of days, and they were particularly grueling for some on some time zones. You may not have all had the opportunity to catch up on that, so I'll just make a few remarks. I'm not going to go into it in massive detail, glancing down the list of attendees here. Most of you were pretty diligent about being in on those meetings. We ran 6 2-hour sessions, so we had 12 hours of meetings altogether. We tackled hard, trying to bring the first the priority one design teams to a head, and did some very good work on doing that. To the extent that there were outstanding items, we flagged for those, and in the past 48 hours or so since we finished up on Tuesday, the design teams have continued to work and try and resolve outstanding items. All of this, as you know, is clearly driving towards the objective of feeding in to a complete proposal, which we are planning to put out in draft form for public comment in the next few days. And in addition, we concentrated on fleshing out further and working together with Sidley Austin, who were diligent in accompanying us through those meetings, further work on the structural elements of the proposal. We concentrated strongly on the structural elements that have a, or the structural, or the variant of the proposal that has a legal separation of an internal IANA, and dealt with a so-called punch list of items that Sidley had raised for which the answers were required. In the meantime, there's been a client committee meeting, and Greg will update us on that from item three in the agenda. So I think we've worked incredibly hard, and whilst there will inevitably be some incomplete points and some areas where we will seek input on the public comment, one can see how a complete proposal is starting to come together. And to that extent, you will have seen version 3.1 of the draft proposal. The reason it's a 0.1 is that it's tried to the staff working on that have tried to absorb the input from the Monday and Tuesday meetings, but clearly have not had the opportunity to process those completely. So I think the view is that you should do that as much for a structure and indication of direction rather than absolutely focus on the detailed content. When the next version comes out shortly, which will be around this time tomorrow, you should be able to see that content being and fleshed out to include the latest work from the design teams. I think that's enough for now. Let's move on to item two, where we'll hear from Lisa on the latest communication with the CCWG, which follows from the meeting of the chairs last Friday and then the work of what we did on Monday and Tuesday.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's Lisa for the record. As you might have seen, we sent a letter to the CCWG chairs very late last night, European time, and we have also sent it to our group. And as in the covering note, we wrote to them that our proposal will rely on their work in various key areas. So that's why it's very important that they deliver their work in time. So we kind of put a little pressure on the CCWG in order to deliver their proposals in time, in a timely manner. So our proposal is not going to be too affected by a late delivery by the CCWG. And actually, the letter was not the new object. It was more to give an update on what we think that the CCWG should provide us with, and to add additional detail to the areas of dependency, because we had a letter from Mathieu, one of the chairs, co-chairs of the CCWG, asking us for further detail. So one of our primary issues was to provide the group with more detail. And we know that our letter has been shared with the CCWG group. We haven't had a call with the chairs yet, so we don't know their response to our letter. But as I say, the issues are not new, so it's more a letter giving them further details. And that detail came out of our two intensive working days. And the four areas are, to just recap, it's the ICANN budget, it's the community empowerment mechanisms, it's review and redress mechanisms, and it's the appeal mechanisms. And while we were dealing with the three that we need input in, the appeal mechanisms are not to be looked at regarding the CCs, but the GTLDs are still interested in appeal mechanisms, but those are being worked on as part of the CCWG work at the moment. So it was more the specific CC TLD appeal mechanism, or RRP, that doesn't need to be looked at. Any questions or remarks if you have read the letter or our specification of the requirements?
While we wait for any hands to come up, I'll just make a comment just to be clear, if it wasn't from what you said already. This formulation of these lists came obviously from Istanbul, and then the detail was not something you and I constructed. The detail was built up over the days of Monday and Tuesday and then edited by you and I prior to sending across. So it was formed during the course of...
I agree. I didn't express it that precisely, and I'm glad that you're doing that, because it's very important that this is coming out of our meeting from Monday and Tuesday. Okay. Avery's asking, so we didn't mention the use of the fundamental bylaws mechanism, and Marika says it's on the second page at the bottom.
So I should also flag one other point for the group, because, and I don't want to steal Greg's thunder from item three, but this list was transmitted to Sidley Austin via the client list today. So that joins up that loop, and it really links to Avery's point. It was flagged in the instructions that I drafted on the back of our Monday and Tuesday meetings that were sent to the client list, and I believe may have been copied to the CWG list, but it was certainly on the client list, which asked Sidley to give us help and work with us to institutionalize the linking between the work of our group and the CCWG. So rest assured, Avery and others, that's very much front of mind for me, because my sort of philosophical position is we've pushed this group hard, and reasonably so, to not include areas of work that could be adequately dealt with by the CCWG. But in dropping those, that potential work, we need to trust that it will be fulfilled and completed by the CCWG. And to that extent, we can communicate it, but we also need to institutionalize it. This is important and understood.
Well, it doesn't seem that there are any questions or remarks regarding this communication, so I have nothing more to add. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. We've possibly exhausted everyone from a combination of workload and questions. But let's move then on to the update from the client committee. So, Greg, I hope you're in a position to deliver that. We had a meeting earlier today, which was attended by Greg, myself, and Lisa. Martin had to send his apologies.
Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Shatton, for the record. Yes, we had a fruitful meeting with council earlier today, and as Jonathan said, you know, we identified a number of documents and points on which we are grateful for and require input from Sidley Austin, one being, of course, the CCWG dependencies list, which is now in their hands. We have also asked them to review particularly some of the output from really the combined DT, C, N, M work when that settles just a little bit with regard to kind of governance best practices rules, just to make sure that everything there is non-eyebrow raising. And we expect a more, you know, general vetting, which indeed they're now also in possession of the latest draft of the proposal, though I expect they will not review that, but rather review tomorrow's draft. We are looking to them as well to essentially boil down their 4th of April memo into, with appropriate updates and refinements, to turn into a relatively brief description of the overall model and working pieces thereof, which could function in an introductory capacity or summary capacity within the report. Sidley is looking to be as helpful as they possibly can be, and their help is really critical. To call it help is to understate it extensively. So we are, as I said, expecting several things from them. They are expecting a couple of things from us. And they will be working closely with us throughout the coming days. I think that's a fair summary of where we're at. I think that the punch list, I believe, may be updated once more, but will probably be set aside unless it seems to have a great deal of further utility. to concentrate on the deliverables discussed, and of course on the drafting of the report itself. So, if there are any questions about the client committee meeting, I'm happy to respond to them. Seeing no questions, I will hand the reins back to Jonathan.
Thank you, Greg. I think I won't add to that. That sounds that's useful. And of course, just to remind you all that if you really want the fine detail, there is a full recording of that hour-long meeting from earlier today. Right. So we now have an opportunity to update from the design teams and just hear if there are any issues or concerns. I want to check if Lisa asks me if we will check on the priority two items. We've had an email discussion about that earlier. Lisa, why don't you go ahead then and just give a quick update on that? It actually relates in part directly to the point that Greg just made now, in the sense that one of the issues was that was put to priority two was a design team looking at which had concerns over conflict of interest and related points. And indeed, once we settle on the structure, and bearing in mind in particular that the CSC has been very mindful of this and not wanting to be unduly involved in anything which has any, you know, keeping a quite a distant position in terms of its brief, we discussed this in some detail with, well, not huge detail, but we made it clear to Sidley, as per our decision to not pursue this as a design team, but that we would expect and require some assistance from Sidley to confirm and or confirm there were no issues and or suggest best practice mitigation of any such issues. Lisa, I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add there. Feel free to come in at this stage.
I'd just like to add that in the notes from the 38 meeting, there is the explanation of our assessment of all the design teams. It was just that I saw some people hadn't seen that, and just to remind you, the explanations are in the notes. So it's not that we haven't dealt with them, but we found that they're covered otherwise, all of them. So there was no need to do further work, except from the .int, where we were expecting input from the GAC. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I'll then move us on to the design team work. I'm just going to check if I'm just going to check on audio then, if Paul Kane is on yet to give us an update on A. Paul, are you on audio? I don't hear from Paul yet, so I think we will pick up on the outcome of the combined DTC, DTM, DTN call as per the agenda. And this is item four, obviously. And what we had here was, on the back of the Monday and Tuesday calls, there had been some attempt by the design teams themselves to work collaboratively, but there was doing two things at once, and that all of them were working on their own scope and brief. And so what became apparent during the course of Monday and Tuesday was that there was a need to do some integration work between the work produced by the design team on the CSC, the Customer Standing Committee, the work produced by the design team on the escalation, and in particular what and if any role the CSC would have in that escalation process and how that synchronized with any other previous work that the design team on the CSC had done on escalation. And then in addition, the design team N that had done some work on reviews and again, the expectations and links with the work of the CSC and design team C. I think we had a pretty productive call and were able to do some good work at integrating that. And I know the list has been alight. The email list has been pretty well alight with detailed discussions on that. So I have tracked that as closely as I might have liked. I think my sense is that we are relatively close to an integrated solution here, but I'd welcome comments from anyone who's absolutely on the button here. That's probably people like Donna, Chuck, or anyone from staff who's working on this. So please feel free to go ahead. Donna, thanks. Go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. I have just sent around a revised markup of the document which was Design Team M's document, the escalation process. So Chuck and I have had a conversation this morning with Sarah Falvey, and Graham Bunton was also on that call, where we've agreed some language. So I think it was quite a large distribution list that it was sent to, but it wasn't sent to the CWG list at this point in time. So if the respective design teams can have a look at the language, and I think if everybody can agree that we're good to go, then I think we've resolved our issues. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Donna. And I should remark at the willingness to work together on this. I don't want to be trite about it, but it was great to see people working on that, and Chuck in the chat confirms what Donna said. So it was great. I mean, I think we really came together quickly and worked hard to try and knit this work together. So that was very useful. Any other comments or questions in relation to that work? Avri, I don't know if you would like to add anything, having been a design team lead on N. No need to say things for the sake of it, but if you do would like to make any comment, feel free. I see you agree in the chat. That's helpful from a design team N perspective. Olivia, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivia Capone speaking. And I may have missed this, but has there been an actual summary of the actual outcome of the combined DTC, DTM, and DTN call?
Olivia, I think that was what was. I think that's live now, as far as I understand and heard earlier, and it will be coming to the CWG list shortly. I think we put out a note from that call, and Grace, just confirm with me, because we could put that to the list. It's not 100% current, since work has continued since then, but I believe a note was prepared on the back of that, and so let me just hand over to Grace to confirm that.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Grace. So to confirm, notes from that meeting were sent to the CWG mailing list, but then the edits on the document, back and forth, there's been about 20, 30 emails on that. Those are between the three DTs, the members of the three DTs. So at this point, those back and forth edits have not been on a public mailing list, but I'll be posting all the drafts at some point when I can find a good page for that on the wiki. But the notes from the meeting and the recording were all sent to the CWG mailing list.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Grace. Go ahead, Chuck.
Thanks. Just to clarify what I think Donna already said is that the latest edits have been sent to that list of the three design teams to give them the opportunity to comment and confirm their agreement with the compromises that were reached, because it was mainly between Donna and I, and it really needs to involve the all the members of the other three design teams. But as soon as that happens, it'll be ready for the full list. Not that you wouldn't be able, there's no problem with you seeing all the exchanges, but it'll take you quite a bit of time because there's been a lot of back and forth in the last few days.
Thanks, Chuck, and I'll confirm that since I think I'm a lurker on those lists. Olivier, is that an old hand or a new hand? Okay, good. So I think that will start to then, clearly as that's agreed by the design teams, that will start to come through on the that'll start to come through on the in the draft of the document as it gets prepared. So keep a close eye on that draft as well, because that's going to be critical that the group buys into and supports the development of that draft. Good. So I hope that we can turn to Paul Kane now. Paul, are you on the audio? Bernie, go ahead. Your hand is up.
Paul has Skyped me. He's dialing in now.
Thanks. So we'll skip Paul for the moment, and we'll go to item 6, which is an update from Alan on Design Team F.
Thank you, Jonathan. Could I have the document displayed in the pod? And while that's happening, we're working to deadline about as tight as one can imagine. The document that you see here is not final by any means. And in fact, the current summary recommendations and full recommendations, they match in substance, but they are far from matching in form, and some wording needs to be changed. And there are also a number of items that the design team still needs to discuss. But we've made very substantial progress in the last week since we effectively started this process. So let me enlarge it enough so I can see it. Okay. The first part of the recommendations are essentially the fallout of no longer having the NTIA in the authorization path. That was a recommendation from Design Team D, and we looked at the implications of that. There are a number of implications, some well understood, some far from understood. The first one is that essentially a purely mechanical one. Right now, the NTI, the VeriSign, the root zone maintainer, is not allowed to implement any changes without authentic authorization from the NTIA. So we need to make some changes to make sure to take them out of the path. In general, that means altering the software, so it's not so the changes are effectively released prior without NTIA authorization. There is a short-term fix that is essentially IANA could log on as the NTIA and authorize their own fixes. That will cover us if the software cannot be changed in time for the transition, or in fact, if we prefer not to change it simultaneously, just to minimize the number of things that will be changing on the same day. So that's a mechanical one. There's then a contractual one that's identified in 1B that right now, under the cooperative agreement with VeriSign, they must wait for authorization from the NTIA. it's very difficult for us, for DTF, to write exactly what we need to say here because we don't know what's going to happen with the cooperative agreement. NTIA has said there will be a separate but parallel process. They have not addressed exactly what that is or how that is. So in the various subparts of this recommendation, we're trying to cover what might happen. Essentially, we may be in a position where there is no change in the cooperative agreement, that NTIA retains that responsibility, at least for a short term, and in which case the cooperative agreement will have to be changed to allow VeriSign to operate without approval, without authorization. If the cooperative agreement is changed and replaced by something, and we don't know any of the details of that, of course, we have to make sure that VeriSign, the Root Zone maintainer, is bound to implement the changes that IANA sends to them. And again, we don't know how that could be done. It may require an agreement between IANA and the Root Zone maintainer. It may take some other form, depending on how it's replaced. So, we're somewhat vague, but trying to cover all the scenarios that we can imagine. The third part transferred from DPD is, do we need to do anything, given that there will no longer be authorization, do we need to do anything not so much to replace, perhaps to replace it or to augment the process? And we've identified a lot of possible things that can be done. It is both within IANA and in the overall process from the origin of requests from registries all the way through to pushing out of the root zone. And we're still debating to some extent if any of that must be done prior to transition or if all of it should be done post-transition. It's clear that everyone is happy with the operation right now. It's not breaking, but do we need to do anything to make it more, essentially, to make sure we don't have any failure problems or failures in the future? The second set of recommendations is associated with other things that the NTIA does, not associated directly with individual changes to the root zone. Upon investigation, the NTIA essentially gets involved in pretty much any decision that IANA makes right now. That ranges from at the high end, the implementation of DNSSEC, and at the low end, it's they give approval or not for the NTIA to change the details in a report they publish on a regular basis, or to decide and approve whether a report can be published. It might include changes in the processing internal to ICANN. For instance, the automation program that IANA embarked upon a number of years ago clearly had to go through extensive NTIA approval. So we have a whole set of things ranging from very significant changes to the overall root zone architecture and how it works, to relatively minor changes of publishing a report that people have asked for. And we are recommending a number of different things. To replace the substantive changes, we believe there still must be an authorization process. Ultimately, there will be input from a lot of people, presumably people who are very knowledgeable, but there has to be some entity, a group or something, which says, yes, go ahead, no, do not go ahead. And I use the expression that will change in the final document, but, it should involve something like a council of elders. That is, we need to make sure that we have input into the process that understands the history, that understands the technology, and can look at second and third order effects to any substantive change. The next type of requirement, the next type of change is relatively minor ones, and we're saying that IANA should not be subjected to an approval process for that. It should use its own internal management processes and, as appropriate, consult with the community or affected parties to make sure that it's not doing anything wrong. That's essentially business as usual for any well-run organization. And lastly, we point out that the kind of changes we're talking about have at times very significant budget implications. And we're simply noting that as we go forward, to make sure that the root zone can stay, root zone and its management can stay totally up to date, that there be appropriate budget available to IANA to do some of these kinds of implementations. The last items.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, I was just going to finish. I'll be finished in a moment or so. Then I'll take questions if that's okay. The next two are essentially principles that we believe IANA should be following. The first is transparency. To the extent that is allowed by, agreements, security issues, business confidentiality issues, IANA should operate in a transparent manner. That is, how they operate and to the extent practical, the reports on the details of what they're doing should be open rather than closed unless there is a substantive reason for keeping it closed. And lastly, the design team feels that as we're going from three entities in the process to two, that the design team felt pretty strongly that should not go to one, and that is the root zone maintainer and the IANA functions operator should not be merged into a single entity, that having multiple bodies in this process, no matter how much robustness and checking you put into it, is likely to be a better situation than simply having one. And those are the main recommendations, and I'm open to questions.
Okay.
Want me to handle a few, Jonathan, or you?
Yeah, let me manage it just so there's no confusion.
Okay.
There are a couple of hands up, so let's go to Donna first of all. Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. Thanks, Alan. I just have a question in relation to, I guess it's more to A, but I just want to note, first of all, that the CSC charter does, in my mind, cover this off somewhat. So I'd like to understand whether the CSC charter was actually looked at when you developed this, because we have a provision in there that the CSC, in consultation with registry operators, is authorized to discuss with the IANA functions operator ways to enhance the provision of IANA's operational services to meet changing technology needs as a means to address performance issues or other unforeseen circumstances. And in my mind, the example that, and we had some back and forth with David Conrad on this, this address orphan issues such as DNSSEC that you've identified. So I just want to park that the CSC charter does in my mind, cover that off to some extent. You mentioned a council of elders in A. I don't really understand what that refers to.
Okay, two things. Although I can't say I looked explicitly at the charter, we did have David Conrad and a number of other people who were, up on what was being done within that design team. The general feeling, and this our perception anyway, was that, yes, ideas may come from the CSC, but it's not the body that is going to take responsibility for authorizing the change. And we believed on substantive changes somebody or something must be responsible for collecting the input from people, whoever the really knowledgeable people are in the area, and making a go, no-go decision. There was a general feeling among some of our members that the CSC specifically did not want that level of decision-making, although it may well have been the place that the idea originated or where the original discussions came from. Now, if that's wrong, then I think we need to go back and look at that. But that was certainly the impression that the people on DTF had. I'll go on to the Council of Elders in a second, but does that address what I'm saying, or are we misunderstanding?
So I think it's addressing what I'm understanding. I still think there's a little bit of a disconnect, so it would be worthwhile just, you know, having a look at the actual language that we have in the Charter.
Okay.
I do have a question that might be a little bit controversial, but why couldn't the ICANN board be the place to approve or authorize any changes?
I don't think we're saying it isn't. What we're saying is that the CWG, before our proposal is wrapped up, should make a recommendation on, or should include a part of that, as to who is it that makes that final go, no-go decision. It may well be the board, or it might be some other entity that we create. Yes is the answer to that. The Council of Elders reference, and that was something I put in, and as I said, the wording will need to change, but I put it in more as a tickler for me to talk about. And we want to make sure that when really substantive changes are being made, that we avail ourselves of the knowledge in the community as to how it should be implemented, if it should be implemented, and what the gotchas, what the effects could be of that, whatever the change is. And that was simply saying that we need to make sure the process includes a way of including the necessary expertise.
There's a constructive suggestion in the chat from Kurt. Alan, you might wish to respond to that as well.
All right. Then I have to find it. Kurt, the Council of Elders, as I said, was there as a tickler for me not to go into the final report. This was me. If you looked at where when the report was, this was sent to the CWG, it was sent in about 15 minutes before the start of the meeting. We're working to deadline, or past deadline, unfortunately. So that was just put in to make sure that I covered the issue.
There's a constructive suggestion there to tidy that up, so that's useful. Donna, are you satisfied that your questions or points have been dealt with or can be dealt with as we stand? And I'll just flag with anyone else if they want to respond to that as well, to Donna's points. But
yeah, I think so, Jonathan. I think there's an understanding there that this isn't concrete yet, so there's still a little bit of room to sort out who does what.
And I've got a note to.
Thanks, Donna. And I should remind everyone. Go ahead, Alan.
No, I was just saying I have a note that I personally will make sure I look at the charter, and if there seems to be a conflict, I'll bring it up with the team.
Great, thank you. And remind everyone that this work of these design teams is meant to be brought to the CWG for review and refinement and or acceptance. Martin, go ahead, Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Jonathan. Martin Boyle here. I just want to make very, very clear in my own mind that this Council of Elders or whatever is involved in the authorization is not actually authorizing each change by change. for the entrance into the root zone file, but it is actually entirely related to things that are now associated with changing technology or changing architecture. Am I right there, Alan?
Yes, certainly. The whole section number one of the recommendations is about changes to the root zone. Section number two is changes to the environment, essentially. And that could be anything from as radical as major changes to the architecture to, in today's world, approval of a new report to be published or changing the details of some report that is published. So it has nothing to do with changes to the root zone and the Whois database. That is covered by one, and it's a completely separate issue. Design Team D determined that that will not be replaced, and that is, well, you know, we have not tried to overrule them or change that recommendation.
Okay, thanks. That's very helpful confirmation. Thank you.
So, Alan, I have a remark that may be a remark or a question, but, you know, I mean, you've introduced this concept, and I understand it's a placeholder of this Council of Elders, your design team, but the one other sort of working principle we were working to was, where possible, we should try and keep the introduction of new structure or structures or group or groups to a minimum. So certainly that's a thought I would give back to the design team to, where possible, and clearly that depends on the scope of the other groups or whatever else is work we're working with in our structure, the role should be absorbed by an existing structure or group unless it is clear that that role is not fit for purpose or appropriately matched to the group and we really are stuck. So that's just something to think about there.
Okay. Number one, please delete those words from everyone's memory. I made a mistake by putting them in as a tickler to myself. I should have written them on my piece of paper. There are two parts to it. One is, who are we going to designate, and we, the CWG, designate as doing those authorizations? And as Donna pointed out, it might be the ICANN board. It might be some other entity we put up. It may, you know, I'm not having fully fleshed out all of the component parts the CWG is recommending. The design team F certainly did not feel capable of saying it is X or Y in the current picture. So it might be some entity we already have. It could conceivably be an entity if as we go forward in the proposal, we feel that the power should not rest with one of our existing ones. Maybe it is a new group. We're certainly not proposing that. The reference that we're now not talking about was not necessarily to the group that authorizes it, but the group that participates in the decision process. And it wasn't meant to be a formal new body we're creating. And as I said, I apologize for putting the words in. It was just to make sure that when decisions are made, we draw upon the right communities. Just as the NTIA might have gone to the National Institute of Standards and Technology to get input on cryptographic techniques, we need to make sure we draw upon the right resources.
Yeah, I think you've made that point clearly. That's helpful. Thanks, Alan. Good. So I don't see any more hands up. I see a reasonably vigorous discussion in the chat, but I don't see any hands coming up to ask further questions or issues of view. And so I think we should take the opportunity then to move to item 6 in the agenda, which is to hear an update from Bourquin on the work of Design Team A and to question or contribute to that.
Thank you, Jonathan. Just checking you can hear me.
Yes, Paul.
Can you hear me? Great. So thank you very much. Following our last telephone meeting, where IANA did participate, and as I mentioned then, they would very kindly review the SLE document that the group has proposed. we have just received initial feedback from IANA, and the group is taking those comments on board, and we'll be reviewing those comments, and we're hoping to have a further conversation with IANA early next week, when I'm back in the UK and my colleagues have had a chance to digest the comments that IANA have made. Taking a cursory look at the comments, there's nothing particularly substantive. There is something with regarding to the distinction between hostile reassignments of CCTLDs and non-hostile. We've only focused on non-hostile. Our emphasis is on stable operation. So we do have a question over that, but we'll be taking that up with IANA, I hope, early next week. There's my very brief update.
Well, thanks, Paul, and thanks for making the special effort to join us. I think the critical issue is going to be with what level of confidence we can put in, and how do we describe the SLEs at the state at which we want to go out for the document for public comment. My sense is that you and the IANA, the design team, and the IANA contacts you're working with understand that, and we'd love to get something settled that both parties can agree on as a reasonable basis for the draft proposal. And so in the drafts that come out in the interim, I think we'll have a placeholder of the SLEs as proposed now, but we'll have to make sure we get clearance for takeoff, so to speak, when we do want to publish the draft proposal, or otherwise we'll have to caveat them with some other form of language.
The point is taken, and rest assured we are trying hard, as we have been for many months now, to bring this matter to conclusion.
Thanks, Paul. Any questions or comments for Paul? All right. It looks like you're off the hook for Design Team A for the present, Paul. By all means, stay with us on the call, or I'm not sure how urgent your next move is, but you know, stick with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Next up is on the agenda is item 7. It's categorized as Design Team X, although I don't think it's strictly a design team, so just to continue to make that clear for the record, and we have an opportunity for any comment or input from Avery at this stage.
Hi, yeah, this is Avery, and I just put a URL in the in the chat. Basically, I sent a CTX but using the template of DTs to the full list since then, and there's really two issues. One, the DTN reviews does sort of call out a next step, but without that next step having been created, there's sort of a nervousness in some of the DTN folks to put that out. So the URL is there, it's been started. There have been some contributions to it. It has a ways to go. And basically what we're trying to develop, I believe, and you know, it's still early in trying to do it, and it's very ad hoc because there's nothing, you know, official about what we're doing. We're just trying to create a proposal, I believe, is a something that serves as the separation mechanism. The first thought is that it would be bylaws. We've talked about that many times in the past, that there be a bylaw. When we used to talk about it, we used to call it a golden bylaw, but now we're talking about the fundamental bylaws that under certain triggered conditions would call up a separation mechanism. Don't even want to call it an RFP mechanism because other things could come out of it other than RFP. Sort of stepped back and didn't want to prejudice, you know, how that mechanism works out. So at the moment, trying to define in more detail how that could get triggered, how it would work, and what its responsibilities would be. There's still a long way to go. The that the drive document is there. A couple of us are contributing to it. I have inflicted co-editorship on Stephanie and Matthew, as was done in DTN. They haven't beat me up for inflicting it on them, so I am assuming it's okay. It is, as all the drive documents have been, open for anyone to suggest text or to make comments on what's there. And until such time as this becomes an official activity, I figured we would keep, you know, chipping away at it. And that's about it at the moment.
Thanks, Sabri.
It could go into detail on what's in there, but...
No, I just think it undermines it a little bit to call it unofficial activity. I think you're making a good effort to try and fill a hole in the perceived gap in the proposal at this stage. So I think anyone who is able to contribute to it and bring it along, the effort is welcome. And so I think we shouldn't undermine your good efforts here, because it's a recognized piece of work that needs a gap that needs to be filled. Any sort of questions or input or willing volunteers to assist here? Holding off for a couple of people who may be typing input into the chat. There's a point here that the work of DTX looks key to the overall work. Well, in a sense, that's true. I mean, I think that one of the criticisms perhaps of this group is that we focused too strongly on the possibility of separation, while for many that was an important ultimate endpoint. We do, if to the extent that it's part of our proposal, which it's the separability is clearly in our principles, we need to articulate how and under what circumstance that will take place, and that's where this work is. My slight concern is that this how realistic it is to get something complete in time for a draft proposal going out for public comment, and therefore what of this we're able to include in the draft for public comment. Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And I'm intrigued by the reason why this was called a separation process and not kept an RFP process. Does that mean the current operator would be prevented from bidding in the RFP?
This is Avery, if I can respond. No.
Go ahead.
There was nothing implicit in calling the separation. The reason it started is one of the earlier conversations that were had on that in one of the earlier meetings was that whole notion of if we go with the affiliate, and if the affiliate either gathered more members or were to spin out, is that prohibited? And wanted to answer the question, no, that wasn't prohibited. And so started thinking of it as separation, but you're right. If it's an RFP, so it was just, you know, that's the name of it at the moment. Okay, maybe there was something a little weird in looking at, you know, DTX with an abbreviation of SM, but that was just the name that came up. But if there's a better name, that can be changed. Suggestion for changing it is just as good.
Thanks, Avery. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and perhaps support this this name and give you some thoughts. I think we've come a long way from where we once were, and my understanding of the kind of the principle we're working to here is there's no doubt that in anyone's mind that the operator post-transition is ICANN. In some new structure, but that IANA will remain within ICANN. One of the concerns was that the primary or overarching concern has been that what if the current operator and immediately post-transition successor operator fails to perform? What remedies exist? And my understanding is we are not in a position where we are considering periodic RFPs per se, but rather that we are considering a bunch of remedies to ensure that the performance remains good, that there is continuous improvement, and that there is periodic review and opportunity for special review, and that there are overarching accountability mechanisms built into the ICANN structure. With all of those protections in place, in effect, we've got a contract that remains with the current operator unless there are significant operational or accountability concerns. And so to that extent, this document is accurately named and usefully describes where I believe the group to be at. So we have many protections against failures of operational or other institutional failures, and that has been the focus of the group. So that feels to me like it would be inappropriate to name it RFP in that context, but rather to define that this is one piece of the jigsaw which defines how we would deal with a separation should there be significant performance or other concerns. Go ahead.
Yeah, and hi, if I can add one more thing. It was my intention, and I think it's already starting to be in some of the writing, that separation mechanism would be some group of people that were doing something, and one of the things they could say was no separation, or they could say new RFP and current operator can apply, or that those things would be, you know, possible responses, outcomes of such a mechanism, that just because everything raises the flag to that mechanism does still at that point does not necessitate either an RFP or actual, you know, further separation. It just opens the door to those discussions. Thanks.
Understood. And whilst I wouldn't advocate necessarily removing the current operator from bidding, it feels to me, given what I articulated earlier, that it's almost like a presumptive renewal unless there is a significant operating or other problem, and to that extent would be pretty curious that the incumbent or existing operator would then reapply, because the primary basis on which one is undertaking a move to separate is because there has been some significant failure.
But no, we'll talk about that.
I'm not sure it needs to be explicitly excluded from being a possibility.
Yeah. I put my hand again. The only thing I'd add, for example, we saw in the last NTIA RFP where being forced to do it a second time kind of upped the operator's, you know, adherence to some of the conditions. So it is conceivable in such a situation where, you know, seeing that things got to the nuclear precipice, that the operator, you know, came back with such an incredible organization that dealt with all those issues, et cetera, that it would be something that people would want to consider. I'm just being very open about kind of the range of possibilities in my thinking. And, you know, I'm not sure what other people working on the document will think. But, yeah, I agree with you. It probably wouldn't happen.
Olivia, it's a stimulating question. Good point. And thanks, Aubrey, for the help and work in answering that. Kurt?
Thanks for letting me take a minute of this group's time. I had typed a whole paragraph into the chat, and then my screen went blank for a second, and everything was deleted. So I agree with Jonathan's points, and obviously I can contribute comments separately. Briefly, some of them would be that I think instead of terming it exhaustion of escalation steps, I think this is really the next escalation step. So this is really that's really kind of a nit. Second, I think you should make the point in this document that the escalation process needs to be clear and objective so that it's obvious to everyone when a step needs to be taken up the escalation process, including the last one. It's really self-evident. So our goal should be for that escalation process to be crystal clear and objective. And third, given that, you know, I sort of have a problem with getting the agreement of the supporting organizations. I think, first, that it would take a while, and if IANA is truly failing, and I don't think it will, but this is the, you know, this is the low percentage occurrence. If IANA is truly failing, I think it's an emergency, and the clear objective procedure would indicate that a change is required. So for timing, I'm against it. And secondly, it turns what's an objective measurement of the escalation path really into what will be a politicized question. And so I'm concerned about having SO and AC approval for that rather than a mechanized process. And then, my fourth point is, I agree with Jonathan that if IANA is failing, then it's really a separation. It's not a, you know, it's not a rebid. And I think excluding ICANN from being part of that rebidding makes it a much more serious step. And so we're actually less likely to do RFPs if ICANN's excluded. So I see that as kind of a benefit for maintaining the current operator. But I'm sorry I took up so much of everybody's time, and I'm happy to put this in writing if you tell me where to put it.
Thank you, Kurt. Thanks for that input. And there is a link to the document. So this could either come in on the list or live editing of the document as appropriate. Olivier?
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier speaking. And another question I have is the triggers for the separation mechanism. I haven't seen anything that might mention the current IANA operator bankruptcy.
Good point. Is this covered anywhere in this? Does the document cover triggers per se? I'm just looking to see right now. I'm not that. I see the triggers. So that's reasonable. I won't say anymore.
Sorry, everyone. There's a line dropped. We're going to fix it.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. All right. Let's. I think that's probably as far as we can take this for now. I think we're going to come to under the next item to an action plan leading to a public comment, which will have implied deadlines in it. And so I'm going to walk you through now where we believe we are, Lisa and I, together with the assistance of staff. In fact, I think it's something, Lisa, you may be willing to take on is walking the group through this, but I'm not sure how readily you're able to come back.
I will, just a second, I will have you. Okay, the action plan going from now? Yes.
Item 8.
Yes. No, I was just finding the document that we have made, so that was just why I was being a little slow in answering you. Sorry. We have this meeting today, and hopefully by Friday morning we'll be able to publish a draft for the group, and that will give you the weekend. And I know it's a very tight schedule, but we'll give you from Friday the 17th of April until Monday 20th of April midnight UTC. It says 33:59 UTC, but it's midnight UTC to give your comments and questions for this document. Then the plan was that we should have a draft out for Monday the 20th of April, but instead of sending it out, we would like to dedicate Tuesday for the review of all the comments, and we'd like to see if there are no objections on posting the proposals out for public comments from the group. So we would like you to have a look and see, even though there might be things that could benefit from minor changes, are you ready to go with the document as it is? And then we would publish the proposal on Wednesday on the 22nd, and of course this will reduce the public comment period with 2 days. So instead of 30 days, we will only give people 28 days to have a look at it. But we really recommend this in order to give all the group a chance to review the draft, and then we hope that everyone is confident in the draft that we're sending out. And then we will have a call on the 23rd of April where we would further discuss the draft, and we'd like to encourage all our members to reach out to the communities and have a discussion on how to do this. And then the plan is that on Friday, the 24th of April, Jonathan and I will do webinars and public briefing on the proposal. The first one is on 6 UTC, and the last one is at 1400 UTC. That is the plan going forward at the moment. I'm just seeing that it says that Jonathan does the 600 UTC and I do the 1400, and it's actually the other way around. But no matter what, we will do those webinars. Any questions for this slight change in plans or any concerns about taking 2 days off? I'd also like to add that we work with Explain to develop a graphic of the model. So that's based on the Sidley graphic. And we'll try and illustrate a summary. So that could help the text. And as we have said before, we're going to send out a short version and the long version with all the annexes and all the details in. But we're trying to fit one version that it looks slightly like the numbering and the protocols version of their proposals in order to make it easier to combine those three proposals for the ICG.
Thanks, Lisa. So, you know, the crux here, a couple of key crunch points, obviously, that we delay publication from 20th to 22nd, carve 2 days out of the proposed 30-day public comment period, which makes it a four full working week public comment period, 28 days, and the rest remains more or less as is. As Lisa says, those webinars are swapped around, which is not, I mean, that's not a big deal, save for me having to do one too early in the morning. And that's it, really. That's in a nutshell. Any comments, questions, or points to raise on this? I think there's no massive surprise apart from the fact that we've reduced, we've pushed out by a couple of days where the 20th just seemed somewhat too difficult. And, you know, providing then, coming out of this, just so everyone's got a very clear view going forward, which I think you have, at the end of the public comment period, we will receive the public comments in and we'll need to turn those around relatively fast before producing a final draft, final proposal ahead of the Buenos Aires meeting. So, and Sean makes a point to that he doesn't see an action item to announce the updated timeline. Well, Sean, true, we probably do need to communicate that, but there's really just a two-day shift in it, and I hope that's clear. It, technically, you're right, there is a change, but it's a relatively minor change.
Jonathan, I see Elise is mentioning in the chat that she thinks that we should have one webinar a bit later so people can read the draft. And I'd like to, well, we actually considered that and we thought it would be have the danger of not giving people enough time to comment on the proposal. But I don't know if we should do one later. What are your thoughts on this, Jonathan?
A really good point. I suppose it depends on the purpose of the webinar. And I can see, I think what we were thinking about was use it as an opportunity to inform people up front and have an opportunity to make that information. I suspect if Elise is thinking about it more on the Q&A side and less on the more on the interaction and less on the sort of pushing out the information, I can see then an argument for why it would be tempting to have it have one a little later. So I guess there's no reason why we couldn't have one a week or so into the public comment period. So we can look at that, Elise. It's a good point. I mean, there's really two options. We either shift one of the existing upfront webinars out, but they have a particular target, and that's to educate readers of the document very much upfront. And I take your point that there may be a use in having a Q&A webinar. We could call it maybe even slightly different, a Q&A session, where the content upfront was much less, and we did a Q&A, and that's what Elise has suggested. So let's look into that. I think that's a good idea, and it might be something we could do 10 days, 2 weeks in, where people have had an opportunity to both hear the introductory webinars, read the proposal, and just to be crystal clear on the format of this proposal. The short form will resemble as closely as possible the existing numbers and protocol parameters to the extent that it can and respond directly to the RFP. It's not strictly true that it will be separated. It will have a significant number of appendices, but it could be separated. How we format that, but in principle it could be separated from the appendices and stand on its own 2 feet. But ultimately, any curious reader will want to look at one or more appendices to see that. And then third, we will ask Explain to provide a high-level graphical communications tool to really educate someone coming in who would like. And so it wouldn't be correct to describe that as an executive summary, but rather something that would communicate in short form what's actually being said in the proposal. Okay, so there is a further request from Constantino to make sure that we do communicate that. So I think certainly we should try and find a way. I mean, I guess we can do that on lists, on the wiki, and by whatever other means we can, just to make sure that it's clear that there's a 2-day delay. Kurt asked if there's an explained graphic coming out of this meeting. Perhaps not exactly this meeting, but there will be an explain output to support the document that goes out for public comment. And Chuck makes the point that one couldn't necessarily separate out the short form, and that was really why I was hesitating. It's meant to be something for an expert user to compare, to cross-compare, but ultimately there's the detail. So when I say, yeah, we will publish them together, Chuck, rest assured. All right, let's move to item 9 then, where we deal with any updates, should there be anything on the principles, or cover off any other items that we have failed to cover off so far.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's Lisa for the record. Excuse me?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, it's Lisa for the record. Yes, as far as I know, and I have to consult Martin Boyle on this because we've had some email exchange today regarding this. There's one minor issue in the preamble for the principles that needs to be settled. All other have been solved. So We're very close to concluding on those principles. But Martin, please chime in and give your view if I'm correct in stating that it's a slight wording in the preamble that is the outstanding issue now. Martin Boyle, are you there?
Sorry, I'll try again. I was.
You were on mute.
I was muted in two separate places on this stupid phone. Yes, you're perfectly right, Lisa. The final draft that we put out had got a modified first paragraph to it, and that has come in for comments from two people, and therefore I've gone back to the person who proposed the revised paragraph in chapeau text to seek for him to withdraw his proposal so that we can go back to the original text. The original text is text that everybody has seen before and nobody had commented on before, so I would not see that as being an issue. All the other comments and modifications that we've seen ad nauseum over a number of weeks have been I've received no further comments, and therefore I think we can just go with all of those. I think, unfortunately, we got caught up in the snowballs of the intensive work couple of days and the design teams, which meant most people treating this as a lesser priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Well, I think what we could do is actually then try and send those principles out as an annex to this and highlight the, well, we can try and I know we can have the discussion with the persons tomorrow maybe and then finalize it and send those out to the group. Together with the other draft. Thank you. Jonathan, I don't think we have any more.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I noticed that Alan Greenberg would like to bring up a point under any other business. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if DTF is the only one, but there are a number of items that we're leaving for future work. Now, the CWG obviously could decide to keep DTF live for another month or so, and we could work on it, or some other process has to be chartered to look at these kind of questions, the ones that we're leaving unanswered, because there's no time in this phase to look at them, and they require substantive discussion with perhaps larger communities. So I just like some guidance as to how we're going to deal with that, and there may well be ones from other design teams, I'm not sure.
I'll come back to that in a moment. I see Chuck's hand shot up possibly in response to that, so let me let Chuck speak, and then I'll come back to that.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yes, I want to follow up with an Alan, and certainly the design team M identified that more work would need to be done if, in fact, there is a mediation optional step in there, and I suspect that, and I don't want to speak for Aubrey, but I suspect I wouldn't be surprised, let me say it that way, I wouldn't be surprised if regard to the role of the IANA review function, IANA review team, that we may need to look at that and see if there are any holes that need to be filled in terms of implementation details. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Chuck. I mean, I certainly think, having discussed this with Lisa, that our expectation is that work will continue during the course of the public comment on filling out details. So the challenge here really is to capture the material points and to get those into the document that goes out for public comment so there can be no doubt of the intention. Now, I don't think we can realistically get every single, we know we can't, it's self-evident, we can't get all of the detail in. The question is it sufficiently clear what the intention of the group is and the level of detail such that we can have a document out for public comment and work in parallel with it? And that's the delicate balancing act. So that's what I think... is the intention, and I see Lisa confirms that. Our intention is to continue working to fill out fine detail during the course of the public comment period. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I guess the substance of my question was not would we continue working, we obviously have to. The question is what structure is that going to take? Do we dissolve the design teams that are leaving unanswered questions as we originally said that they're going to really be short-lived things? And create something else to do it, perhaps a wider group in, if it needs more consultation, or do we simply say the design teams will keep that task and work over the next month or so to affect those? That was really the substance of what I was asking.
Well, it's a good question, Alan. I get it now. Lisa, are you going to provide your thoughts on that?
Yes, because I think it would be nice to actually have the proposal in front of you before we decide on how to go on with the further work. And as we say, we might have a call on next Thursday, and I think that could be a call where we could conclude on some of those things. And because if to me, I think that the design teams were a good way to do it, but we might consider otherwise when we see what is missing in the final draft. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. And I'll add that I'm pretty much with you on that. And it may be that there's a combined solution. Some design teams that have only just got going may need, you know, that have started late, much later, may need to continue for a while in order to round off their efforts. And the judgment call will be which ones to close down and consider substantially complete. Alan?
Yeah, just to be clear, I wasn't asking for a ruling today. I just wanted to make sure it's on our to-do list that there is work to be done and we need to decide who's going to do it. That's all.
Thanks, Alan. But it was a good question, a good point to raise. All right, I'm seeing us 90 minutes into a call in a week that's been hugely busy and apparently finishing what we can or need to do for the moment. So let me just make sure I... Eduardo, the question here on legal versus functional, your question is, will legal versus functional be answered after the public comment period? I think we go into the public comment period with legal and see how strong, if there are strong views against that, we may need to respond. And we need to make clear the basis on which that has advantages and perhaps issues where there are, and give the opportunity to get feedback on that. Alan?
Yeah, Jonathan, just following on to that, then we need to be clear in the report that we're asking that question.
I agree, and that's always an interesting point where we flag points that we want specific input, and that might be something to look at as the document takes shape. It's for anyone to give any input on where we think there could be specific areas over and above the opportunity to provide general input. And by the way, I think we have covered this before, but just to remind everyone, we will do our best to seek structured input as opposed to free-form input so that the input is directly targeted. And I guess the group needs to think about, as we are now, where, if anywhere, we highlight that the group feels that there is a requirement for specific as opposed to general guidance or general office for public input. So it's a good point. And I note on that slightly lighter note, but nevertheless important, Grace has highlighted that the updated attendance spreadsheets are available, and we have Greg Shatton to be recognized for outstanding performance in attending the highest number of meetings, followed by Graham Bunton. So that's the award for attendance. And I think it's more than just attendance. There's been some outstanding contributions, but that goes much more broadly than just those two. So good. We did our best to make sure we could find at least one meeting that was sufficiently antisocial and bracketed by others that we couldn't have you attending all of our meetings, Greg. So sorry that we did knock you out of that one. All right, thanks, everyone. Let's bring it to a close and work hard on producing this document. We really appreciate the ongoing collaborative and cooperative spirit to get this document in shape. for next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, all. Thank you.